It's nearly noon and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station. We're broadcasting from atop Signal Hill, right next to the high school and the library, overlooking downtown Kodiak, where it is 48 degrees right now. It has been a beautiful day and will continue to be such until tonight. The clouds will start rolling in. Mostly sunny skies tomorrow, though. Coming up on the midday news, the fate of the ferry, according to an administration's work group. An employee for the city of Kodiak has tested positive. And Kodiak's case count has jumped again, as has its early voting. All that and more coming up after national headlines. We are in the middle of our membership drive here at KMXT. If you'd like to renew your membership or become a new member, check us out online at kmxt.org.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. An early voting scramble is underway in Wisconsin. Officials are trying to get 320,000 outstanding ballots returned by the time polls close Election Day in 1 week. The U.S. Supreme Court had rejected the Democrats' request to extend the deadline to receive and tally ballots. Wisconsin is one of the blue wall states President Trump flipped in 2016 and is visiting today. He heads to West Salem from Lansing, Michigan, where he appealed directly to blue-collar workers.
Joe Biden spent the last 47 years outsourcing your jobs, opening your borders, and sacrificing American blood and treasure in endless, ridiculous foreign wars, countries you've never even heard of for the most part.
Today, former Vice President Joe Biden has Georgia voters on his mind. NPR's Scott Detrow recaps Biden's visit to Warm Springs.
All campaign, Biden has cited Franklin Delano Roosevelt as a role model for his potential administration. Speaking near where Roosevelt died in 1945, Biden cited a story about someone watching the funeral train go by, saying he didn't know Roosevelt, but that Roosevelt knew him.
Few words better describe the kind of president our nation needs right now. President who is not in it for himself, but for others. A president who doesn't divide us, but unites us.
Biden has made unity and lowering political tensions a key part of his closing message. He's hoping it leads to the first Democratic presidential win in Georgia in more than a generation. Scott Detrow, NPR News, Warm Springs, Georgia.
Louisiana is staring down its fifth major named storm of a very busy 2020 Atlantic hurricane season. Zeta emerged as a tropical storm from Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula today. Forecasters believe it will turn back into a hurricane over the Gulf and make landfall in the U.S. tomorrow night, affecting areas from Morgan City, Louisiana, to the edge of eastern Mississippi. The pharmaceutical giant Eli Lilly is confirming that a drug it was evaluating for its ability to stop infection with COVID-19 didn't help patients already sick in the hospital. NPR's Richard Harris reports the company is now focusing instead on prevention strategies.
2 weeks ago, the National Institutes of Health paused enrolling patients in a study that was testing monoclonal antibodies to see if they could help people already sick with COVID-19. That study has now been stopped altogether. Eli Lilly says the drug wasn't hurting people, but it wasn't beneficial either. But Lilly says the drug can help keep people out of the hospital. 2 weeks ago, it asked the Food and Drug Administration to grant emergency use of the drug in people freshly infected but not too sick. The company says the drug reduced the risk of hospitalization in older people and those with obesity. The FDA's decision could come as soon as this week. Richard Harris, NPR News.
You're listening to NPR News.
A report recently made public by the Dunleavy administration proposes cuts for the ferry system that puts the future of the Tustamina Ferry in limbo and reduces the route from Kodiak down the Aleutian chain to twice a year. The report was the work of a committee appointed by the governor in February. He appointed Tom Barrett, a retired Coast Guard admiral, to lead what he called the Alaska Marine Highway Ferry Reshaping Work Group, which he tasked with finding a way to cut costs and make the Alaska Marine Highway System more efficient. It's a job, Barrett says, that involved asking some difficult questions.
What is the plan long-term for the Marine Highway fleet, if you will, the fleet of vessels, the size of vessels, the capabilities? You know, a lot of them are too large to serve small communities efficiently.
The Ferry Reshaping Group did not make any decisions about the future of the Tustamina, which is in need of replacement.
We didn't take a position on that because we don't see a long-term plan for it.
Money has already been allocated for the Tustamina's replacement, which would cost an estimated $220 million. But before that money is spent, Barrett says there needs to be a plan that looks 30 years into the future and decisions made about how the ferry will fit into the overall system. One costly decision that's been on hold is whether the Tusty would be fitted with marine safety equipment that would allow it to travel to Canada. The Tustamina is one of the few ships in the fleet that is ocean-going. It also serves communities on the Aleutian chain out of Kodiak, a route Barrett says should be cut back to twice a year.
It's a long, long run through difficult water, and we believe at least that there may be some viable commercial alternatives available. They'd have to be tested, obviously. That's something the department would have to do to solicit and see if they're realistic.
Barrett says if day boats were used, the Tustamina might not be necessary. But Representative Louise Stutes, who serves on the working group, wrote in the report that the system's sailing weeks had already been reduced to the breaking point. She argued that once budget issues are resolved, operating days should go back up. She also questioned whether other alternatives will work and argued that the state has an obligation to serve communities in the system no matter how small they are. Barrett says the report was just the first step in a process of trying to right-size the ferry system. He says the working group has asked the governor to appoint a transition team to flesh out its recommendations.
You need a small group at a high level focused on doing that. Whether they adopt it or not is up to them, but that was part of our answer, having some place that's accountable for making whatever changes they decide to adopt and implement.
The working group also recommended that the governor appoint a 9-member board and give it the authority to manage the system. An employee for the city of Kodiak has tested positive for the coronavirus. City manager Mike Tvenge reported yesterday that in an email that public health officials have instructed the city worker to self-isolate, and he is doing so. He says all city staff known to have contact with the employee who tested positive have been tested as well. 3 new cases of COVID-19 involving Kodiak residents were reported on Tuesday, that's today. Since Friday, there have been a total of 8 reported in the Kodiak region. The Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization says the 3 most recent cases are all travel-related, with a contact investigation underway. Since the first outbreak in April, there are now a total of 106 cases counted in the Kodiak Island Borough. 8 are classified as currently active. With 1 week to go before November 3rd's general election, Kodiak has already set a record for early voting. KMXT's Jared Griffin has this overview of the Kodiak voting scene.
As of Tuesday, Kodiak voters have cast nearly 1,600 ballots, with 1,150 of those being mail-in ballots, up 40% from 2016. In 2016, 810 mail-in ballots were cast, for a total of 2,400 ballots. In all, Alaska voters have cast nearly 100,000 mail ballots. There were nearly 13,000 registered voters in Kodiak's House District 32 for the 2016 general election, and that number has jumped to 14,000 for the 2020 election. Heading into next week's election, we also have a clearer picture of how the political makeup of Kodiak Island voters has changed since 2008's historically high voter turnout. On Kodiak Island, voter trends since 2008's record turnout indicate a community shifting from the Republican Party toward the Democratic Party and undeclared or nonpartisan status. Since 2008, the number of registered Democrats in Kodiak has increased 7%. The number of registered Republicans, however, has decreased by almost 9%. But the largest increase is the number of undeclared and nonpartisan voters, jumping 10% from 5,500 in 2008 to over 6,000 today. The most dramatic shift has probably taken place in the city of Kodiak, where registered Democrats have increased 15% since 2008, and registered Republicans have decreased by 20%. Undeclared and nonpartisan voters have increased 18% over that same period. Registration for third parties in Kodiak has remained statistically flat, with the exception of the Libertarian Party, which has more than doubled from 39 in 2008 to 84 today, but it still represents less than 1% of Kodiak voters. Island-wide, there are 2,700 registered Republicans and 1,100 registered Democrats ready to cast votes in next week's election. For KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jared Griffin.
The choices Alaskans will be making when they vote for the legislative candidates this year will have a major impact on the future of the state's largest savings account. Most legislative candidates say they want to protect the Alaska Permanent Fund's earnings reserve, but some candidates are staking out positions that could drain the account. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports on two races that show what's at stake.
Robert Myers is a Republican running to be a state senator for a district near Fairbanks. He's a North Pole truck driver who defeated longtime lawmaker John Coghill in the Republican primary. Myers is campaigning in support of paying full permanent fund dividends. He says voters have shown their support for full PFDs by electing Governor Mike Dunleavy 2 years ago and by supporting candidates like himself in the primary.
The public, as a whole, while recognizing the challenges that the state is facing because of declines in oil prices, also wants the cut to the dividend to be the very last option rather than the very first.
Since oil prices fell in 2014, legislators and governors have cut the state operating budget by more than 20%. But they've also drained $18 billion in savings. Now they're pulling funds from the $11 billion earnings reserve and splitting them between paying PFDs and funding state government. But the more you spend on one, the less you have available on the other. Paying full PFDs would leave a more than $2 billion hole in the state budget. That money has to come from somewhere. Myers has talked about cutting spending to reduce that hole, but he declined to name specific cuts other than lowering spending on public education and Medicaid, both of which face significant political and legal obstacles.
It boils down to math. The biggest programs are going to end up with the largest cuts, and that's just the way it's going to be.
Myers also wants to spend other state reserves first, including those that subsidize the cost of electricity in high-cost areas and pay for college scholarships and grants. But he hasn't presented details on how to balance the budget beyond next year. Marna Sanford is Myers' opponent. She coordinates government relations for Tanana Chiefs Conference and is an independent running with support from the Alaska Democratic Party. Sanford says the only way to protect the earnings reserve is to change the formula that calculates the size of the dividend. She says it's impossible to balance the budget with only cuts.
I do support the PFD, and that is why I want to change the statutory formula. I think that those are the only two statements that can live together.
She points to the numbers. The Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation estimates that after lawmakers draw funds this year and next, there will be $6 billion left in the earnings reserve. Sanford says that without changes to the formula, there would be no dividends at all in a few years. Myers is one of several Republican candidates running for the legislature who oppose dividend cuts. But some Republican incumbents in competitive districts are signaling an interest in compromise. Representative Sarah Rasmussen is running for re-election in an Anchorage district that includes Sand Lake. She says it's important for the dividend formula to be as high as possible and to be set at a level the public can rely on. She likes the concept put forward by Dunleavy of putting any change to the formula to a vote of the people. But Rasmussen also doesn't want to draw more than the legislature has planned from permanent fund earnings. She says the legislature should work to balance the budget without overdrawing from savings this year. Rasmussen says a balanced budget will require give and take.
Everybody will have something in it that they don't like, but there's going to be something in it that everybody has that they do like. And that's really, kind of the compromise.
Rasmussen adds that she's opposed to an income tax, but would be willing to consider a sales tax if more spending cuts are reached. Independent Stephen Trimble is running against Rasmussen. He supports setting the dividend formula at a lower level in the near term, with a goal of returning to the original formula in the future.
We have to make hard decisions, you know, and they have to be for the betterment of the state. And some of those may be unpopular, but we need the political courage to make them.
He says any taxes or other budget solutions shouldn't be taken off of the table. He says voters he's talked to oppose deep cuts to public education. And he says requiring a public vote on changing the dividend formula would make it harder for lawmakers to reach a compromise on a spending plan for the future. Not every candidate in the race is talking compromise. David Neese has run several times for different public offices in recent years without winning. He's also running for Rasmussen's seat as the Alaska Independence Party candidate. He supports the full dividends under the 1982 law, as well as paying back the more than $4 billion in dividend reductions over the past 5 years. While that would completely eliminate the permanent fund's earnings reserve by 2022 under current projections, Neese isn't deterred. He thinks the price of oil will go up. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Three jet boaters who were stuck in a foot of ice were rescued Sunday by the Coast Guard. An Air Station Sitka MH-60 Jayhawk helicopter rescued the boaters, who were stuck 5 miles northeast of Hole-in-the-Wall Glacier on the Taku River at 8 p.m. The boaters were hoisted from their boats and transported to Juneau Airport. Watchstanders in the sector Juneau Command Center received a call from the operator of a Good Samaritan vessel, the Nantucket, who reported the vessel stuck in the ice about 5 p.m. An additional call from one of the boater's spouses alerted the watchstanders that the boaters were overdue. Watchstanders directed a 45-foot response boat crew from Station Juneau to Taku Inlet to relay communications and support the helicopter rescue.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
The local news is supported in part by Ardinger's Fine Furnishings, home of the Tempur-Pedic Ergo Collection and the Tempur-Pedic Breeze, made especially for those who sleep hot. The Breeze cushions and supports you while channeling excess heat away from the mattress. Tempur-Pedic's Ergo Base allows you to move the bed into multiple ergonomic positions for sleeping or relaxing. 486-5554.
And by Arctic Physical Therapy Services, Incorporated. Professional rehabilitation for all your physical therapy needs. We repair the world's most complex machine. 813 Mill Bay Road, 486-4499.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Some ups but mostly downs for salmon permit values. More after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute works to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. Learn more at alaskaseafood.org.
The value of Alaska salmon permits is ticking up in two regions while toppling in others. The bellwether fishery at Bristol Bay is one of the uppers for drift permits. Doug Bowen runs Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer.
Probably the lowest asking price out there right now is $170. Of course, the next big news here for the bay would be the forecasts for next year, which are not out yet, and they could certainly have an influence on what people are willing to pay for those permits, but they have come up considerably from the low of $150 there before the season.
Kodiak was a bright spot for salmon seiners, and those permits are on an upswing.
Before the season, Kodiak seine permits were probably worth around $35, and we have them available on the market now at $40, so they've trended up.
Elsewhere, permit values have plummeted. At Cook Inlet, yet another lousy season has pushed down the value to $20,000 or less, the lowest since farmed salmon caused a crash in the late 1990s. The Copper River drift fishery also was a wash.
The fish just did not show up on the flats there, and I think before the season, those permits were around $140, give or take. Recent sales around $105. They've dropped a lot. There's not much movement there.
Prince William Sound seiners did better, but those permits also are trending downward. Bowen says the permit market reflects the disastrous salmon season at Southeast.
That market for the drift seine permits down there is just about flat.
Still, despite the downturns, Bowen says people are still optimistic about the salmon industry and boat sales are brisk.
I don't think anything demonstrates confidence in the industry as much as buying a boat. It's a huge investment and people are making them.
Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
Our ancestors fought for our right to vote. Now it's our responsibility to warrior up and vote to protect our ways of life. Your vote is your voice. Make it heard. Together we make a difference. This message is sponsored by Native Peoples Action Community Fund. Visit www.npacommunityfund.org for info on how to vote safely on November 3rd. Hoyana Masicho Gunalchish Hoyanakpak Karasakung.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 27th day of October, the year 2020. The sun rose today at 9:11 a.m. It will set again at 6:36 p.m. That's going to give us 9 hours and 19 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 44 seconds compared to yesterday. We have a high tide coming up here on the east side after lunch at 12:41 p.m. That will be a 7.9-foot tide, followed by a low tide at dinner time at 6:44 p.m. of 2 feet. And our high tide after midnight will be at 12:43 a.m., 7.5 feet. And our low tide tomorrow morning here on the east side will be at 6:50 a.m., a 1.1-foot tide. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides, you have a high tide coming up at 1:06 p.m. That will be a 14-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 7:20 p.m. of 2.5 feet. Your high tide after midnight will be at 1:17 a.m. of 13.33 feet, followed by a low tide tomorrow morning on the west side at 7:30 a.m. of 1.7 feet. 48 degrees here in Kodiak. It is a beautiful day. We're looking for sunny skies tomorrow as well. Maybe a little cloudiness overnight, though. There's a low of about 33 tonight. We're looking at northwest winds to just 5 miles per hour. Mostly sunny skies on Thursday as well. And a chance of rain on Friday. Mostly cloudy skies Friday night. Sunny skies on Saturday and sunny skies on Sunday. Sunday night, chance of snow. Don't think about that. Mariners, here is your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 1,005 millibar low will hover over the northern Gulf and remain nearly stationary, then weaken to 1,012 millibars on Thursday afternoon. The resulting weather, Marin Island and Sitkanak small craft advisory through tonight. West wind at 25 knots right now on our east side offshore. Seas to 10 feet. For tomorrow, west wind to 20 knots, seas to 6 feet. Over on our west side in the Shelikof Strait, we're looking for a small craft advisory through tonight as well. West wind to 25 knots right now and seas to 5 feet. For tomorrow, northwest wind to 20 knots and seas to 4 feet. For our inside waters, Chiniak and Marmot Bays, we're looking for west wind to 15 knots and seas to 2 feet in Marmot Bay right now. For tomorrow, look for west winds to 10 knots in the morning, turning to variable less than 10, seas to 1 foot in Chiniak Bay tomorrow. And then Marmot Bay, west wind to 20 knots right now, seas to 3 feet. For tomorrow, look for west wind to 10 knots, seas to 2 feet. Well, KMXT's program, The Lowdown, has been revived for this week while we do our membership drive. Our guest today was Mike Murray from Safeway. He was great. And tomorrow, we're going to have the regular talk Doc of the Rock show with local physicians. It's all kinds of things related to COVID and Kodiak. Thursday, we're talking to local mental health experts, and Friday, some of the local pastors. Senior Citizens of Kodiak will hold a board meeting Friday, October 30th. That's happening at 10:30 a.m. The meeting will be held in the center's multipurpose room. There will be social distancing and masks required for the public and board members. The meeting is open to the public. Call 486-6181 for more information. Students of the Kodiak College University Studies class are holding a fun and family-friendly event for Halloween. It's called Chalk the Walk. The theme, What I Love About Kodiak, working individually in families or with other small groups. They will decorate the sidewalks around the college. It's a fun way to meet others in a safe environment, and everyone will be working within their bubble. You can be creative with chalk and practice positive social norms. All supplies are provided. You just need to bring your creativity and your love for community. There is an improved mitigation plan on file. Everyone is invited and anyone may attend. Children under 16 will need to have adult supervision. Again, that's on the Kodiak College campus from noon till 2 p.m. October 31st, Saturday, on Halloween. Meetings coming up. We have a Parks and Recreation Committee meeting at the Bayside Fire Hall. That's happening right now. For tonight, we have the Solid Waste Advisory Board meeting. That's happening at the Assembly Chambers at 5:15 p.m. And on Thursday, the Assembly is having a work session. That's happening at the School District Conference Room. For more information about any of these meetings, call the Borough Clerk at 486-9311. Notice is hereby given that the City Mayor and Council will tour city facilities on October 28th and 29th. The tours are open to the public and will begin at the time and location stated in the proposed schedule that you can find at the City of Kodiak website. They'll start at Wednesday. They're starting at 9 a.m. at the Kodiak Fire Department. And Thursday, they're starting at 9 a.m. at the Public Works Department. And that's the big yard between the Police Department and Walmart. Please note that the suggested schedule may vary, and call the city clerk for exact locations at 486-8636. Attention voters, if you haven't yet registered for the November election, Alaskans can still register and vote for president and vice president with same-day in-person voter registration now through Election Day. For regional voting locations, call 270-2700. That's 270-2700. Or you can go to their website at elections.alaska.gov. Elections.alaska.gov. The Kodiak Regional Planning Team will meet on Tuesday, November 10th at 9 a.m. to discuss salmon enhancement, rehabilitation, research, and management priorities in the Kodiak region. The meeting will be open to the public and held via teleconference. If you'd like to participate, contact Nathan Weber at nathan.weber@kraa.org, or you can call 486-4733. That's 4733. Elk hunters on Afognak Island this fall have taken advantage of the mild weather to reach established harvest objectives during the recent drawing hunt, and that included portions of RE-755 registration hunt area. Consequently, elk hunting in the portion of RE-755, the remainder, southwest of Afognak will not open this year and be closed by emergency order effective Thursday, October 22nd. The closed portion of the remainder hunt area and southwest of Afognak includes areas west of the main north-south logging road from the Danger Bay logging camp north to its terminus to Discoverer Bay. Afognak Island elk are managed using established harvest guidelines for individual herds and a 10% harvest objective for the overall elk population.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.